The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, that Detroit defense really showed up last night and really just hampered that Dallas Cowboys offense. I mean, not much has been able to hold down this Cowboys offense this year. They've been one of the top offenses in the league. But I'll tell you what, that Detroit defense clamped it down yesterday. They had 3 forced fumbles, 2 interceptions, and 5 sacks last night. So it was just straight up domination. The Lions came into this game with a game plan and they knew exactly what to do, especially on the defensive side of the ball. They took care of business in a big win for Detroit, 44-30 over the Dallas Cowboys. It was a pretty close game for the most part, but Detroit just was able to get the lead and they just never looked back. Jahmyr Gibbs, he ended up having 3 touchdowns last night and actually ended up passing Barry Sanders for having the most touchdowns before the age of 24. Like, how crazy is that? So to even be mentioned in the same breath as Barry Sanders is crazy. But and I'm not shocked, though, that Gibbs had such a huge night last night. I kind of felt like he was going to be the key to this Detroit Lions team. And if the Cowboys weren't able to at least contain him a slight bit, I knew it was going to be a problem, and that was a problem. The only problem I didn't expect was this Detroit defense, just because their secondary is just blown to bits. But their front 7 just got at Dak. He really had no time at all last night. And then, of course, the Cowboys shot themselves in the foot with all their stupid penalties that they had. So it just was not really a good game from the Cowboys, but a really solid game for the Lions that they needed. Both teams are still in playoff contention, but, you know, things got a little bit more bleak for Dallas, but Detroit still hangs in there, even though they're not even in contention still. They needed the win, but they still aren't the outside looking in. So let's get back to the rest of Week 14 and my head-to-head matchup with the homie Simon Ruvalcaba. Last week, we both went 10-6, so I still have a 2-game lead. I have 127 wins, 66 losses. He has 125 wins, 68 losses. And we both start the weekend off 0-1 because we both had the Cowboys last night. So let's get right into the rest of Week 14, beginning with the Seattle Seahawks at the Atlanta Falcons. Right now, the Seahawks are a 7.5-point favorite. And, you know, the Seahawks have everything to play for, where the Falcons really don't have much to play for other than pride. They're still kind of in the hunt, but there's no way I believe this Falcons team even has a chance. But Seattle definitely has a chance, not only at the playoffs, but at their division still. They just got to keep winning. And defensively, they are one of the best in the league. Their defense keeps them in each and every single game. Whether it's a huge lead, whether it's a small lead, this defense is here to play. The Seattle offense, they have their ups, they have their downs, but for the most part, they're able to take care of business. And I just kind of feel like that's what they're going to do against these Atlanta Falcons. Atlanta's just not a very good or consistent team at all, other than Bijan Robinson. Their defense is terrible. Their offense is okay, but Seattle's coming in hot, and I just feel like Seattle's going to win this one pretty easily, 27-20. Then we have the Tennessee Titans at the Cleveland Browns. Right now, the Browns are a 3.5-point favorite, and Myles Garrett's sack watch, he is at 19 sacks on the season. So I predicted he's going to get 25 and easily break the sack record, the 22.5 sacks that Michael Strahan and TJ Watt currently hold. But I just feel like Myles Garrett is on a heater. So don't be shocked. And this is against a very, very, very bad offense. So don't be shocked. I mean, what's he at, 19? So if he gets 3, he's all real close. He'll be a half a sack behind. I'm breaking the record. So don't be shocked if he's a half a sack behind, because I kind of feel like this is going to be a game where he might end up with 3 sacks. That's been kind of his thing, where he gets about 1 to 3 sacks per game. As a matter of fact, there was a stat I saw today that he's basically averaged a sack per game his entire career so far in 129 games. So that just he's just a beast. He's just a motherfucking beast. And thank God for him for the Cleveland Browns, because that's all they got to look forward to. But with that being said, they are playing the Tennessee Titans, who are a garbage can ass team. And really, I guess both teams could benefit from a loss. But the Titans look like they're ready for another first round pick next year for some odd reason. But Cleveland, they've got the better defense. They've got a little bit more talent on the offensive side of the ball. So I'm leaning towards Cleveland in this one, 21-14. Then we have the Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers. Right now the Packers are a 5.5-point favorite. I expect this to be a really bitter division battle. As a matter of fact, I kind of feel like this is going to be a very defensive game, where I wouldn't be shocked if both defenses end up with some turnovers, some sacks, and really just make it difficult for each offense. Both offenses are very similar, where both of their quarterbacks are having really solid years. It's just the pieces around them are okay, or just have really good games here and there. But for the most part, the only consistency really is at the quarterback position. But with that being said, the Packers are at home, and it just kind of feels like the Bears are ready for a loss here. These division games are usually crazy, and I just kind of feel like Green Bay is going to step it up for this one and get the win 24-23. Then we had the Washington Commanders at the Minnesota Vikings. Right now, the Commanders are a 1.5-point favorite. It doesn't look like Jaden Daniels is playing this week, but there's potential he could play next week. But with that being said, I don't think it really matters. As a matter of fact, I kind of feel like you might want to just sit Daniels the rest of the season, because Washington doesn't really have anything to play for at this point. And Daniels has been injured. It feels like every time he comes out to play, he gets a new injury. So I kind of feel like you might as well just let him sit the rest of the season. Since they aren't playing for the playoffs, they're really just playing for pride, and so are the Vikings as well. But as far as Jaden Daniels go, I kind of feel like they just might as well sit him. But, you know, I don't control that, but I feel like you might as well, since they have nothing to play for. But even so, the Vikings are just not a very good team either. Both of these teams are just basically waiting for the end of the season and just head off into the off season and start planning all their new moves. And just the Vikings, I don't know if J.J. McCarthy is even playing this week, but I just don't really think it matters. I think both teams are very similar, so it's probably going to be a very close game. And I have the Vikings winning just because the Vikings are at home 20-17. Then we have the Miami Dolphins at the New York Jets. Right now, the Dolphins are a 2.5-point favorite. Both of these teams are pretty bad. The Jets are really awful. Miami's just kind of playing in football purgatory at this moment. I mean, they're up, they're down, but they're really not a competitive team. They're really not a threat for anything. And I wouldn't be shocked if they lost this one, just because the Jets are that kind of team where they just get these random wins out of nowhere. But I do think Miami's the better team. I think Miami's been playing better, and I just think they have more talent. So I've got Miami winning this one 23-21. Then we have the New Orleans Saints at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right now, the Buccaneers are an 8.5-point favorite, and New Orleans is just one of the worst teams in the league. So I just kind of feel like they're running into a buzzsaw into this game. Tampa's getting a lot of their players back from injury, so they're starting to get more healthy as the season moves along. Especially on the offensive side of the ball, but their defense has really been taking care of business, and that's really where I think New Orleans is going to struggle, is I don't think their offense is going to get anything going, and I just kind of feel like this is going to be all Tampa all day. I've got the Buccaneers winning big, 42-7. Then we have the Indianapolis Colts at the Jacksonville Jaguars. Right now, the Colts are a 1.5-point favorite. And, you know, these two teams are kind of on opposite trajectories. The Colts are on a 2-game losing streak, where the Jaguars have been winning a few here. But, you know, I kind of look at the Colts as a more trustworthy team, even though they're on a 2-game slide here. But, I mean, that's just to be expected throughout a long season. It's not shocking to have a lull at some point. But in this one, I just kind of feel like they're going to bounce back. I kind of feel like Jonathan Taylor is going to step it up, have a really solid game. I feel like Daniel Jones is going to step it up, and he's just going to get back to business. The Colts defense is going to step it up and get back to business. I do think it's going to be a close game. I wouldn't be shocked if Jacksonville just really kind of makes this a battle back and forth, where they're just kind of trading scores all the way to the end, and maybe this is one of those where they get a walk-off field goal or something like that. But I do have the Colts winning this one 27-24. Then we have the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 6.5-point favorite. And I kind of feel like this is going to be our typical Pittsburgh at Baltimore game. I think it's going to be all defense all day. I think it's going to be an ugly-ass game. I feel like it's going to be one of those where you're going to be lucky to even get field goals in this one. I wouldn't be shocked if there's a safety or even just weird, random-ass plays, because that's how Pittsburgh-Baltimore goes. And both of them, neither one of these teams are playing great. No one even really has an identity on either of these teams. Both of them are good on the defensive side of the ball, but then have their failures on the defensive side of the ball. Both of them have their positives on the offensive side of the ball, but then they have extreme negatives as well. So you just don't know what you're going to get from either team. But since it's a division battle, this game definitely matters for the division, because this is what it's all about. These are basically the two coming down the stretch here. And I'm leaning towards Baltimore just because they're at home. I've got Baltimore winning a close, ugly game, 17-16. Then our afternoon games, we have the Denver Broncos at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the Broncos are a 7.5-point favorite. And the Raiders are just another one of those teams where they're waiting for the offseason. They're just waiting to see where they're going to be in the draft and how to improve this terrible-ass team. Whereas the Broncos, hey, they'll take another win. Now, they're probably not overlooking Las Vegas, because you should definitely not overlook any team that you play, but especially a division battle. But with that being said, I just feel like this is going to be a really, really solid game for from the Broncos, where I just kind of feel like they're going to just play their typical game. Great defense, enough offense to get them some scores, and I've got the Broncos winning 23-10. Then we have the Cincinnati Bengals at the Buffalo Bills. Right now, the Bills are a 5.5-point favorite. Cincinnati has looked better since Joe Burrow's come back on the offensive side of the ball. And Buffalo is just a very, very odd team. The receiving core is just very unreliable, but it's just, you have Josh Allen, you have Cook, and you have a really solid defense. I just look at this team, and they're very good, and they actually have something to play for. Whereas the Bengals, they are there for the playoffs, but I don't see them really being one of those teams who even grabs a last place spot. I just kind of feel like they're going to be one of those teams who pushes teams to the brink, maybe gets a win here and there just to kind of fuck up somebody's day. And that's really just kind of what I feel like I see from this team. But with that being said, Buffalo has a lot more to play for. They really need this win. And Cincinnati's not really a good team beyond Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins. And we don't know if T. Higgins is going to play in this one. And that could be the difference. But I still think, you know, Buffalo's at home and Buffalo really needs this win. And I feel like Buffalo's running game is going to be difficult for Cincinnati to stop. So I've got Buffalo winning this one 28-24. Then we have the Los Angeles Rams at the Arizona Cardinals. Right now, the Rams are a 7.5-point favorite. You know, this is a division battle, so I actually think it's going to be a close game, but I think the Rams are going to dominate this game. I feel like they're going to have the lead for the majority of the time, and Arizona's just kind of pushed them to the brink. But I just feel like the Rams are a much better team. The Rams really need a win, especially coming off of that Carolina Panthers loss. They need to show everybody that, hey, we're for real. They need the win not only for that, but they also need the win because they need to keep winning in their division, and they also want to keep winning so they could potentially get that number one overall seed in the playoffs. And Arizona just is really not a good team in any way, shape, and form. So I have the Rams winning 26-21. Then our Sunday night football game is the Houston Texans at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now, the Chiefs are a 3.5-point favorite, and I kind of feel like this is going to be another game where it's a defensive battle. I feel like the Houston Texans defense has been playing some of the best football, especially this last month and a half, and Kansas City has not been playing good on the offensive side of the ball at all. Everybody was waiting for Rashee Rice to come back, and even though he's been back and he has made some big plays, this Kansas City offense is not good at all. It's pretty much all Patrick Mahomes all day, and if he's not making the big plays and the receiver's not completely wide-ass open, they don't make the plays on offense. They really don't have it anymore on offense. They really are not that scary other than Patrick Mahomes, which of course is a great weapon to have. But like I said, if a dude drops a pass or if it's defended well, Mahomes doesn't catch the balls either. And so it's just too much Mahomes for this offense. But also their defense is really good, and Houston's offense is not good at all. And so I just kind of feel like this is going to be a defensive battle to the bitter end. But with that being said, Kansas City is the better team. They have much more experience, and I trust them a lot more in these close matchups and these home games, and just at this time of the year, more so than I do the Houston Texans. I do think the Texans are going to push them to the brink. Wouldn't be shocked if it's kind of like a tied game for the most of the way, or, you know, just like a slight lead one way or the other. But I do have the Chiefs winning this one 20-17. All right, let's get into the week of basketball, and just another dominating week. I mean, we are having so many great performances and just so much going on. But we also had a very odd thing happen with a team releasing a player earlier this week. So we'll get right into that once we get to that day. But let's start off with Monday. The Detroit Pistons just had another dominating game. Well, not dominating, but just another really solid game over the Atlanta Hawks, 99-98. Jalen Duran, man, this guy is having a phenomenal year. 21 points, 11 rebounds, and just dominated that paint. Cunningham dropped 18 points himself, and Detroit just keeps rolling. While they lost a couple of games last week, they're like, no, we're going to get right back in it, and they're still the top team in the Eastern Conference. And also on Monday night, the Cleveland Cavaliers got a big win over the Indiana Pacers, 135-119. Donovan Mitchell dropped 43 points, 9 rebounds, and 6 assists in a huge win for the Cavaliers. Then the Miami Heat just trounced the Los Angeles Clippers, 140-123. Jerome Powell, this is his old team that he used to play against, that he used to play for, the Clippers. He dropped 30 points. Bam Adebayo had 27 points and 14 rebounds. And then Tyler Hero had 22 points himself. Then the Dallas Mavericks actually got a really nice win over the Denver Nuggets, 131-121. Anthony Davis, he is back from injury and had a monster game. He had 32 points and 13 rebounds. I mean, when he's healthy and playing, he is a monster. But sometimes when he suffers those injuries, then you're like, fuck, he's gone for like a month. Cooper Flagg also dropped 24 points in this big win over a really good Denver Nuggets team. Then we had the Phoenix Suns have a dominating game over the Lakers on Monday night, 125-108. Brooks, who just always plays LeBron very well, I don't know what it is, but he's just always really solid against him on the defensive side of the ball. He had a great game. He had 33 points, but Luka also had an amazing game himself. He had a double-double with 38 points and 11 rebounds. Then on Tuesday night, Oklahoma City Thunder kept on winning. They beat the Golden State Warriors 124-112. SGA dropped 38 points. Chet Holmgren had 21 points and 8 rebounds. And Williams himself dropped 22 points as well. I mean, he's come back from injury and has just really elevated the play of this Oklahoma City Thunder team, who still only has one loss on the season. And also on Tuesday night, the Minnesota Timberwolves had a crazy game against the New Orleans Pelicans that went into overtime. The Timberwolves got the win, though, 149-142. Anthony Edwards just took over this game. He had 44 points, and a good brunt of those points came in the fourth quarter and overtime. Rudy Gobert also had a double-double with 26 points and 13 rebounds. Then also on Tuesday night, the Boston Celtics beat the New York Knicks 123-117. And look out for Boston. Boston's slowly getting going. You know, I kind of felt like they were going to be a decent team this year. I knew they were going to have their struggles without Tatum, but I still felt like they were going to be a decent team just because the Eastern Conference really isn't that tough beyond the Pistons and the Knicks. But Boston's starting to get hot, and they took down the Knicks 123-117. Brown had 42 points. Bridges had 35 points on the opposite side. You know, I was already telling you on Monday's show that with the Knicks, Bridges has been having an amazing season. And even in this loss, he had a monster game himself. So he's just really continuing to be a huge force for this New York Knicks team. But the Boston Celtics got the win in that one. Then we had the Philadelphia 76ers. They took down the Washington Wizards 121-102, and Tyrese Maxey just continues his dominating season. He dropped 35 points in this one. And then also on Tuesday night, in a surprising turn of events, you know, the Los Angeles Clippers, they've been one of the worst teams so far this season. The only thing they've had to cheer for is James Harden's been pretty good, but whoop-de-fucking-do, that's kind of his thing. Score a whole bunch of points, have a whole bunch of assists on the world's shittiest team, and that's just what his deal is. But they signed Chris Paul in the offseason. He said that this is going to be his last year, and then they just ended up releasing him. It sounds like he and Tyronn Lue and James Harden just did not agree on things. As a matter of fact, the kind of hilarious thing is that Chris Paul was basically yelling at them because he felt like they should work harder and want to win, and he wasn't getting that vibe from them. So that sounds like typical Los Angeles Clippers to me. But Chris Paul, you know, who I'm sure there's plenty of teams out there looking to potentially sign him, but he did say this was going to be his last season, so who knows if he's going to just end up retiring or if he's actually just kind of holding on to see, am I going to go back to San Antonio? Maybe one of these other teams might want me. That he might be sitting around waiting for some type of injury to happen because, you know, the season's long and maybe some team will lose one of their top-tier players and they'll just need Chris Paul to fit in. But very shocking move from the Clippers, but also not a shocking move because they're such a shitty team. So that's kind of expected from them. But I think Chris Paul, you know, he got himself out of a very terrible situation because he was most certainly not winning a championship with the Clippers. And it's like, if that's going to be your last season, your last hurrah, you might as well at least try and sign with a worthwhile team and potentially get a ring that he has yet to get. Because that's basically the only thing Chris Paul is missing is a ring in his stellar Hall of Fame career. Then on Wednesday, the Denver Nuggets bounced back in a huge win over the Indiana Pacers, 135-120. Jamal Murray, though, had a career night. He went 10 for 11 from the three-point line and ended up with a total of 52 points. So that was another guy I was talking about on Monday's show where I was like, Jamal Murray is just going off this year. And if he just keeps having this kind of year, while the Oklahoma City Thunder are rolling all over everybody, you might want to watch out for the Denver Nuggets with Jokic and Murray. And in this game, Jokic only had a double-double, but he still had a really nice double-double with 24 points, 13 assists, and 8 rebounds. And then on Wednesday night, the Milwaukee Bucks took down the Detroit Pistons 113-109. And actually, Giannis Antetokounmpo, he injured himself in the first quarter of this game, so it was mostly no Giannis in this game. As a matter of fact, they were down 18 points at one point, but made a huge comeback against a really solid Detroit Pistons team in which Kevin Porter was the dude in this one. He dropped 26 points, and the Bucks got the win. Then last night, the Philadelphia 76ers took down the Golden State Warriors 99-98. At first, it didn't look like it was going to be that close of a game because the Warriors were down 24 at one point in this game. As a matter of fact, they only scored 10 points in the first quarter. So it was not looking like a good game for them because just a lot of their starters were out of it last night. But they did make a furious comeback, but the Sixers were able to hold them off. Tyrese Maxey dropped 35 points. And then Vijay Edgecombe, their rookie, who's been having a phenomenal year. Now, he hasn't really been blowing anybody out of the water, but the dude has been money on some of these game-winning shots. He even had the game-winning shot last night, where he ended up with only 10 points, but still, he's been a very, he's been a really solid dude this year, and he's kind of that guy where, you know, you're looking at the rookie class and you're not really talking about this guy, but he's made a huge impact on this Philadelphia 76ers team so far. And then last night as well, the Lakers got a great win over the Toronto Raptors, 123-120. Rui Hachimura hit the game-winning shot. We did not have Luka playing in this one because his wife was I believe it's actually his girlfriend, wife, don't matter to me. But she was giving birth to his baby in Slovenia, so he's going to be out the next couple of games for that. So no Luka, no problem. I mean, Rui Hachimura, like I said, had the game-winning shot thanks to LeBron, man. Austin Reeves, he was having a great night, 44 points, 10 assists, but like on the game-winning shot, it went Austin Reeves, everybody was on Reeves, so he passed the ball to LeBron, and then LeBron passed the ball to Rui, and Rui was wide open and just needed to make the shot, and he did, and a huge win. But the big news in this game, in LeBron's stellar 21-year career, he only scored 8 points last night. That is the first time in 1,297 games, I believe 2007, is what that dates back to, is how long it has been since LeBron James has not scored double digits in a game. So that is just a crazy stat from him. But even so, I mean, it came on a perfect pass, a perfect play, and a perfect win from the Lakers, who just keep on rolling as well. And I mean, Reeves, this guy, it's crazy. You know, Luka, he's been out a few games this year, and every time Luka's out, Reeves just has a monster game. And then when Luka's back, he and Reeves just are a beautiful tandem. And then, like I told you, LeBron's not going to have a monster year, but he's going to make the plays, and that's exactly what he did with Rui last night, and that's how they got the win. All right, now since we're talking NBA and, you know, we're in December and the trade deadline's in February, and we actually have quite a few names out there that could potentially be traded by the trade deadline. So this week's list, I decided to do the top five potential NBA trades that are happening. And I just feel like these are the five best players that are not only in the pool, but I just feel like they're going to make an immediate impact. Or they're just a name that's out there that's a big name, that, or they're playing for a terrible team, something of that nature. So it just begins with number one, and that would be Giannis Antetokounmpo, because all offseason, actually dating back to last year, it's pretty much been, is he getting traded, is he not getting traded? He ended up not getting traded last year, playing with the team last year, and then this whole offseason it was the same thing, is he getting traded, is he not? And they did not trade him. But the Bucks are not having a good year. They're having a very, I would call, flat year. It's, they're up, they're down, they're up, they're down, and that's kind of what it was last year. And so it's kind of looking like they're probably going to end up trading him. And if that's the case, obviously, whoever gets Giannis is getting a beast of a player. I mean, he's by no means past his prime. Injuries, of course, are a problem with him, but that's really the case with every single player in the NBA. But Giannis is definitely a game changer. And if he ends up going to a team like they're just talking about, like teams like the Knicks are interested in him. Can you imagine if he goes to a team like the Knicks? Also, Golden State's another team who's interested in him. Can you imagine him with, like, there's a lot of competitive teams that are already playing competitive basketball right now. If they just add in a Giannis Antetokounmpo, that could really, really change the trajectory of some of these teams. And so Giannis, like I said, it may or may not happen, and I wouldn't be shocked if it doesn't happen, but also at the same time, I wouldn't be shocked if it does happen. So, but to me, he's obviously the number one name out there because he's the most talented. He's an MVP player, he's a champion, and he's definitely, absolutely, 100% making an impact on whatever team he goes to, including the Bucks, because he's obviously made an impact with them as well. Then at number two on my top five potential NBA trade candidates, I have Lauri Markkanen. Now, he's been a trade candidate for the last couple of years just because the Utah Jazz have not been a good team at all. Now, they're improved this year, but do any of us really think the Jazz are going to be a real legitimate team this year? I don't think so. But he's a very talented player, and he's playing on a team that's just garbage, and it just feels like he could potentially be one of those dudes. And if he is, he's still young. And he hasn't really been hampered down by injuries as well. So whoever gets him is actually getting a franchise-changing type player. If he ends up going to a team that just kind of needs another dude, or even goes to an already talented team, then he's really going to fit in. I mean, let's just say he goes to the Warriors, for example. I mean, he's going to fit right in with that offense because they could really use somebody in the paint. And he would make a huge difference. Because the thing about Markkanen is that, like, a lot of his talent gets overshadowed because he's in Utah. They're not a talented team at all, but they're also not a very popular team. So unless they're making waves by getting wins, you're not going to really hear about him. But he's a very, very good player. He's great on the offensive side of the ball. He's great on the defensive side of the ball. He can get rebounds, and he's just a really strong player. So whoever gets him is getting actually a franchise-changing guy. Utah may not want to trade him. They may want to build around him, and I can't blame them if that's the case. Then at number three on my top five potential NBA trade candidates, I have Anthony Davis. Now, they've been talking about potentially trading him ever since they shit-canned the GM who traded for him last year. I mean, Anthony Davis, he's always an injury-prone player, but, I mean, when he's playing, he's a damn good player. I mean, he's great on the offensive side of the ball, but a killer on the defensive side of the ball still to this day. So whoever is getting him, they're not getting, I wouldn't call him a franchise-changing player for sure. You're just getting you're getting a building block. You're getting a dude who is going to give you some great offense. You're getting a dude, like a team that really could use some defense, really should be on the move for Anthony Davis, because he's that guy. He is one of the top defensive players, and he's just a really reliable dude. He's just a really solid player, and no matter what anybody says about him, I've always been a huge AD fan. Even before he was with the Lakers, I've always loved Anthony Davis. He's just been a really solid player, and I feel like anybody who gets him is getting a solid player, other than the injuries. But like I said, you could say that about a lot of players in the league. Then at number four, I'm going to drop five potential NBA trade candidates. Ja Morant, you know, he's pretty much been in purgatory with the Memphis Grizzlies for about the last year and a half. Ever since his suspension with the league last year, and the year before that even was kind of bad for him as well. It just has not been a good time with him with the Grizzlies. And he even was suspended for a game this year for detrimental to the team. So he just hasn't been getting along with the front office. He hasn't been getting along with the coaches. He just hasn't been getting along with anybody in this on this team. So it just kind of feels like it's inevitable that he's going to get traded at some point. Now, it's kind of sounded like the trade market for him is not that big of a pool, because while he's a very talented player, and he really is, he's kind of been a headache for the Grizzlies. Now, is that going to change if he actually goes to like a better team that has a better front office, that has a better just identity, and they're just more shaped and more well-rounded, and they don't really need to centerpiece everything around Ja Morant? I kind of feel like that could work for him, especially, I mean, I don't know what kind of – who's really in the market for him, but let's just say he were to go to maybe like a team like the who needs a guard? I don't know, maybe like the Miami Heat or the Boston Celtics, a team that's already like established but could just really use another player to just kind of fill in and not be the centerpiece. I kind of feel like that. But I mean, Ja Morant, very talented guy. It's just, you don't know what you're going to get from him. And these headache players, sometimes that's just what they are, a headache. And I've just been reading that not a lot of teams are that interested in him, but I just kind of feel like it's inevitable that he's probably going to get traded at some point by the trade deadline this year. And then rounding out the top five potential NBA trade candidates, I have Zion Williamson on here. It's just been a shit show with him for the New Orleans Pelicans since day one. It's just been injury after injury after injury. Now, I don't know what you get for Williamson, because at this rate, it's just like he plays and then he's injured. He plays and then he's injured. And it just kind of feels like at some point the Pelicans have to move on from this dude and just get something for him, because at this point they're going to get nothing for him besides a bag of chips. And it's like, you're going to have to do something. I kind of felt like they should have got rid of him 2 years ago. They probably could have got something for him, but now at this point they're probably going to be lucky if they even get anything for him. But it's looking like he might be on the move. I'd say out of all of the trade candidates that I just mentioned now, he's probably the least likely, just because there isn't a huge market for him. And he's just always injured, and they always talk about him being on the trade market, but they just never get rid of him. I kind of feel like, because he still probably does put butts in seats for the Pelicans fans, but I don't know. Is he playing a lot? No. I just kind of feel like the Pelicans got to move on from this one and just hope that they can actually get something decent in return for him, because the Zion Williamson project has not even remotely turned out well for the Pelicans at all. It's actually been, like I said, just a shit show. I mean, at least when they had Anthony Davis and Chris Paul, those were their last two kind of like top tier players that they drafted in the draft. You know, Chris Paul was, he was drafted when they were the Hornets, and he was a top tier, amazing player for them. And they really only traded him because they were just in purgatory and they really just needed to make a move. And then it was basically the same thing. Then they drafted Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis had some great years with them. And then they just ended up trading him because they just needed to make some moves. Now with Zion Williamson, he hasn't even played well. He hasn't even had like a marquee game. Like, at least Anthony Davis and Chris Paul had some crazy great games with New Orleans. Zion has not even had like a standout moment at all in his entire NBA career. So I just think the Pelicans need to just cut ties with the dude and just move along and see what they could get for him, because it's just been a shit show. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.